Steve Hansen was first elected to the Sacramento City Council representing District 4 in 2012. Councilman Hansen is returning to private life after an unsuccessful bid for re-election earlier this year. He joins us today to reflect on his tenure, his battles, and his thoughts about the future of Sacramento. Councilman Hansen, what happened?
Well, Scott, it's great to be here. Thank you for finally inviting me to Studio Sacramento after all the years of promises. It only took me having to lose my council race to get that invitation.
But you know, I may be late, but we're always certain.
You know, like Mark Twain said, though, the reports of my demise are greatly exaggerated. And, you know, this political year, this calendar year, has been a scramble for so many people. It started at the beginning of the year with early primary here in California, March, because we wanted to be relevant in the presidential selection. And so our normal June primary got pushed up. That meant filing and campaigning really started over the holidays. And roughly like 3 weeks after the beginning of the year, ballots started going out. And it just is it's an interesting time. The cacophony of Democratic candidates vying for a win. I was a Kamala Harris supporter. I was always had an affinity for Joe Biden because I worked on the Obama race in 2008. Very early in 2007, I signed on after he announced and was on his LGBT leadership group. And then when he chose Joe Biden, I had happened to be part of the Florida election protection team, making sure that voters weren't intimidated in Jacksonville. And so I saw this sort of Democratic politics, and that's kind of where my heart is. And so I spent a lot of time on the presidential race this year, but also I have a young child. You know, my partner and I adopted, we did foster to adopt, and we had a 4.5 month old baby join us. Who's now our son Henry in mid 2018. And there are a lot of working parents out there who understand exactly what I'm about to say, but two jobs, council's paid part-time, even though it's really a 24/7 job. Another job, my partner in grad school having and working full-time, and we had a young child, and then a campaign on top of that. I think we just bit off more than I could chew and was just exhausted in the process. And there's all this new energy. A lot of the activists in Sacramento think that we need dramatic change. A lot of that's inspired by Bernie Sanders and others who kind of want to reshape the Democratic establishment. And so I just chalk it up to the fact that you know, we did every day as much as we could to make the city better. I personally am very proud of all that we accomplished. I left a lot on the field. There are some wins and some losses, and they're all pretty significant. But if life were fair, we would live in a different world. I would have liked to continue to serve. But at the same time, you can't go into these jobs expecting just to get reelected forever. You have to leave it all on the field, like I said, and it's an interesting place we find our city in, a crossroads of sorts.
Yeah, it sounds almost like it was bittersweet for you because the way you describe everything that was going on in your life, it sounds like a very, very rich life. And so, like so many of us, what I'm hearing from you is that you were just pulled in a lot of different directions all at the same time. It's almost like I can hear almost a little bit of relief in your voice at the same time you would have preferred to continue on.
I mean, as a kid, I faced a lot of adversity. My mom and I were homeless from time to time. I went to live with my dad eventually because of that. And I've faced a lot of pain and sacrifice and other trials in my life. And I think the core of it is you don't jump into the breach of wanting to make your city better without an absolute acknowledgement that it is an honor to serve. And it's a transitory thing that you have to do better and leave it better than you found it.
And
then you also have to pay it forward.
Right?
Yeah. There's a huge cost. There's a cost. And that cost for me when I first ran was different because I was a single person. I could be a workaholic, or a human doing, as one of my former bosses called it. But as I had a partner and then a family, I just really didn't want to be one of those elected officials who sacrificed their home, their family, because the demands of the public can consume you. And our district here at District 4 is one of the most vibrant places in the city of Sacramento, experiencing the most change, experiencing a lot of the challenges, whether it's homelessness or the cost of housing because of the lack of production, and a lot of the battles that happen in the central city and in District 4, they set a tone for the rest of the city.
I want to take you back to 2012 when you first won, because we're talking about, you have this entire body of work that I want to get to in a few minutes, but right now, go back to 2012. What was it like running and winning as the first gay man to be elected onto this council?
It had a lot of layers to it, because I think, you know, Scott, I was never supposed to win. That was the idea, is I didn't come from the right neighborhood. I wasn't from the right family. I was too young. I was too gay. I didn't have those things that people in the political class usually assign to winners. And, you know, we left it. We fought very hard, but we didn't expect in the end to win. And squeaked through against a really formidable and honorable opponent, Joe Yee, who I still have great admiration for. And we had the kind of race that I think makes people proud. It was about issues. It was above the belt. It was always friendly. And it was always about really our love for Sacramento.
But how were you received running as a gay man back 8 years ago?
We had a sign that somebody spray painted fag on, one of our signs. We got pushback at the door from folks who never said exactly why that they were unhappy. It was just, you're not our type of candidate kind of remarks. I think in the end, you know, as much as I am an LGBT person trying to represent the community that I come from, I'm also an urbanist, and I care a lot about the city and the city issues. So it was very important to the LGBT community that I win, because we'd never broken that rainbow wall. But on the flip side, I talked a lot about transportation. I talked about being able to bike and walk safely, about infill development, about the arts in particular in Sacramento, which are a passion for me, because I believe a city without a creative economy is a soulless city, and we have so much that's great. And then we just come out of the recession, and a lot of my focus was on reshaping our city's economy to be more resilient, because we had been so reliant on the government sector. We had really allowed the rest of our city's economic potential to hollow out. And so diversifying that economic base, really revamping our city's finances, those were the things I talked about a lot, and I believe we made significant progress on.
And when you look back at that, especially because of the district that you represent, and there's always been a sense that while it's your district, a lot of people have a lot of opinions on the things that happen in your district, and you've had to lead on that. What achievements are the ones that you are most proud of that you've achieved and that you've made over your tenure?
So I could give you a litany of things, because I am a workaholic regardless. I like to say yes, and I like to tackle big challenges. You can look at the built environment. We built some of our first parking protected bike lanes, but those are based on this policy framework of Grid 3.0, which was really restoring the functionality of our streets for all the users, walkers, bikers, others. You can look at the fight over McKinley Village or the arena or Sacramento Commons. Certainly the arena overshadows a lot, but the built environment, as we've changed our policies and advanced projects, we've reshaped the trajectory of the city by creating this multimodal infill oriented place where, and this is part of what people knocked me for, but I'm not a NIMBY. I am a YIMBY, a yes in my backyard. I believe change is going to come to cities, and it's how we embrace and manage change that's the critical defining factor to our success.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because you talk about the built environment, you talk about things like the arena and all that. You have a reputation of someone who is steadfast in that after you take a position, you analyze an issue, you take a position on it, regardless of the popular winds, you don't necessarily move. What project would you say improved the most in its final execution because of the fact that you just didn't go along to get along, which I know that there's a lot of pressure on the council to do?
And Scott, you're speaking to this tension that I describe as the difference between our role as council members as trustees for the city, fiduciaries for the city, versus just representatives of the people who are the loudest in our districts. And those come into tension a lot of times on projects like you're talking about. One of them, it's one that I think still is a Rorschach test for people, isn't one that we've talked about yet. It's called the Yamani. It was a entitlement to allow for an 11-story building at 26th and J. And to a lot of the neighborhood folks and the preservationists, even though this wasn't a historic site, they saw the piercing of a 3-to-4-story topology for a building as this a threat to the way of life in the central city. And I had a belief that we weren't going to necessarily see that project built because of the cost of construction for type one construction, which is high rise construction, but that we should continue to move that project forward to send a signal that we were a city willing to embrace change. Out of that came also some good things, that fight. I committed to and delivered on redoing all of our Central City Historic District plans. We got the financing for that. It was about $600,000 to ensure that all of our historic district plans had sufficient detail and integrity to withstand them. In our Central City specific plan, which is about how the city will evolve and change in the central city over time, we created a tapering so those denser areas along commercial corridors would not overwhelm the historic homes that are just adjacent to those. And I don't think activists always appreciate that out of this push and pull, these arguments can come lots of good things because they look at what they lost and they focus on the one project that they lost.
That's a good place to go, which is that when we're talking about loss, what initiative or project was a near miss for you that you wish you could have gotten across the finish line, but for whatever reason, the stars didn't align?
Well, there's probably two right now that I think are really important to me that I hope Mayor Steinberg carries on. One is the redo of Capitol Mall. I labored in the trenches for 6-7 years to advance a project that we approved earlier this year. We got money to do construction drawings. And that's to really return Capitol Mall to sort of this Champs-Élysées rather than a sterilized 1950s prototypical, it looks nice, but you don't really enjoy being there kind of place, to a place that is vibrant for festivals, for walking, for people. And on Capitol Mall, we helped spur this project called the Frederick by Shorenstein, which is a company out of the Bay Area, but they're building an 8-story mixed-use residential structure. A lot of people would have liked to see a high-rise there. The economics of that didn't prevail, but we're going to bring new life, like when they sink a ship in a barren part of the ocean to create a reef. That apartment project there called the Frederick at 6th and Capitol will support all those local businesses that don't have much love when employees aren't there or the arena's not operating, to provide a higher base for them. But it also begins to activate Capitol Mall, and the redo of that street is extremely important. Another one is the Land Park Amphitheater project. We have this beautiful outdoor space that is basically unusable because the infrastructure and ability to program it is very difficult. Sac City College is the best user we have there. Their equipment gets stolen. They have very little ability to support the patrons with restrooms or green rooms, those kind of things. Lighting and sound is really hard. And I think COVID has taught us something, which is that we can't take for granted that these indoor spaces are always going to be available to us. If we had the amphitheater or a couple of the other things we've been working on, like a new courtyard performing space at the Clara, the old Fremont School in Midtown, one of my arts projects, we would be able to give some of these arts organizations who perform indoors a place outdoors to survive. The art stuff, we didn't go into the art stuff, so I'll wait for you.
Well, let's talk about the arts for a moment. One of the aspects of our civic life that you are most known for being a champion of is the arts. And I'm curious as to what is your view of the importance of the arts as a part of the fabric of a city and of our region?
I, especially during the adversity of my youth, always found inspiration to go on through some of the darkest times because of music, because of art, because of an opportunity to escape the moment you find yourself in where you're clenched with anxiety or fear, or you just feel the world is insurmountable. And art is that escape. I also believe that a city without arts is not a city that's alive. Because, as I mentioned earlier, I think a soul of a city is reflected. And it's not always like pleasant, because artists like to argue and fight. That's the beauty, you know. Lady Bird Johnson called the clash of ideas the sound of freedom. I think those things, whether on stage in a recording studio or other places, are how we help each other understand what our community is like. And in a world, particularly right now, where people are segmented into news channels that they only hear what they want to hear, into bubbles based on the community that they live in, art is one of the few things that can bridge those divides and bring us together. There's nothing better than going to Music Circus, seeing the different generations come together to watch Little Shop of Horrors or The Wiz, or, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights, right?
Right.
Presenting this diverse audience from all backgrounds with material that challenges them to think beyond themselves. I once heard Maya Angelou talk about it as forcing people, or it might have been Cornel West when I was in college, forcing people to shift in their chairs a little bit because you want to make them feel just a little bit uncomfortable so they question what they think and how they think it. But if you look at the project, Scott, that we've been able to deliver, when I came into office, there was a lot left undone because of the good work of our predecessors. We were able to get the Clara done in a different way, but we took this beautiful 1920s school building that had been mothballed by the district, turned it into the new headquarters for the ballet and all these other performing arts groups. The B Street Theater had been left for dead because of the confidence gap, because they couldn't figure out how to close the fundraising gap. So the city came in and we provided about 10%, but it gave the other donors and the people on the project this hope that it could get done. The Powerhouse Science Center rising on the river, that was a leap of faith. It almost didn't happen. At the very last minute, we were able to get the federal program that was phased out in the 2017 tax bill, to get the zero interest bonds. But literally our city manager and treasurer, with the support of the mayor and I, they pushed the button 5 minutes before the market closed on the last day of the year in 2017, and were able to execute the bond purchase. And then SMUD, we were able to bring as the name sponsor. There are all these projects across the city, and soon we're going to have a project in Wynn Park with a group called Musiclandria, which is a music instrument lending library. They do music education, music therapy programs. They have a recording studio, but is the largest music instrument lending library in the country. And it'll be the new anchor to this 1937 fire alarm center building that's been empty for 30 years and bring new life to that park.
With all of those things, that corpus of achievement and that focus on the arts, there's a lot that you've accomplished. What was your toughest moment, though, as a council, where you kind of sat in your chair and really questioned whether it's worth it or not?
I think that there have been two battles, and I use the word battle maybe inartfully over the last couple of years. One is this tension between the community, the police department, and criminal justice system. As we've all seen the inequality and the real harm for particularly our African-American community that's been endured. And, you know, whether it's Joseph Mann, Dejan Flanaux, or particularly Stephon Clark, that reckoning has been, I think, painful for everyone as we try to move through. And this year with George Floyd and some of the other things that happened, you know, the pain and the calls for change, it makes it difficult because I've always found myself in support of driving change. But, you know, I am a white man, and a lot of people understand that I may be LGBT, but, you know, it's a very difficult thing. And so we, as I listen to the community, trying to reconcile the drive for change with the need to pull through the policies, procedures, the laws, to try to find a way to manage change. You know, for some activists, it'll never be enough, and I understand where they come from. But we have a duty to the safety of everyone, and that doesn't necessarily mean through policing. But from the time I came into office, I thought, whether it was homelessness or some of these other things, we'd left law enforcement to do the work of social services because of the defunding at the federal, state, local level of the things that can get upstream to the social determinants of health, whether it's education, job opportunity, actual healthcare issues. And so it's not a surprise that in the end, because those things, and the city is not typically assigned in the working of government to do social services. Those are the role of that's the role of the county and others. So we've stepped in and we've tried to reshape that. That is one that is super painful. And then the fight over rent control, you know, I put myself on the line to help put together a deal working with the activists and with the stakeholders. And we got a deal through the council. It was 6-3. But for a small group of activists, they were hell-bent on never giving up. And we had one of them renege on her word to withdraw the ballot measure. And so we just came through the election last week and saw that Measure C, which was the product of that bad faith, fail fairly dramatically here in Sacramento. But the rent control program I helped create with my team and the stakeholders is I think, the best representative of good practices, database decision-making, evidence decision-based decision-making, and that will live on. And so I think out of these hardships come good things. And that's I think, the bottom line on a lot of it.
As you leave the council, what advice do you give your current colleagues and those that are going to be joining the council in the coming weeks, in terms of the priorities that you think most need to be focused on in the coming year?
You know, I can't help but think that Sacramento has gone from a place where collegiality was prized, collaboration, communication, working together, neighbor and neighbor, neighborhood across neighborhood, to in the Trump era, people turning on each other, consuming each other, absolute perfection being the goal, rather than, you know, our old saying of don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. And so I think partially it's, and this is what caused me to run in 2011 for the seat. We had a council then who was focused on petty grievances, on personalities, and they lost sight of what was in the best interest of the public. And I think largely, I am an institutionalist, and I believe that the best outcome for the public is a system that can function, where leaders put aside their own ego and work with people who disagree with them to do as much good as they can every day. I think that's going to be one of the main challenges, because there is a tone and tenor across the city right now that comes right out of that federal acrimony that says, if I disagree with you on one thing, I must be your enemy. And that is not a way to run a city. That is not a way to live in a community. And we have to get back to a place where we don't have to agree, but we have to work together. That's number one. Number two is to really let our love of city, our love of this place we call home, contribute to our willingness to sacrifice together to make it better. And some of that's going to be on social issues, but a lot of it, you know, I talked about the budget earlier. We have a city that could have gone bankrupt 2012, 2013. We made some very difficult decisions on pensions, on labor contracts, on spending that created an economic uncertainty reserve, 10% of the general fund. We've done a bunch of things to diversify our city's economic base, and we have to maintain that.
And I think, unfortunately, I think we're going to have to leave it there.
Okay. Sorry, Scott. Got a lot more to talk about.
And maybe we can do it again.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.